Aaron, we're here. We made it.
We're here, but we are not complete, Kristen.
I mean, it happens. Like the professor explained, sometimes when you go through the vortex, like there's just no guarantee that everyone involved and all their belongings is going to come out on the other side. It'd be like that.
It's true, because we recorded two intros at once and our technology could not handle it. And we ended up losing those intros. So welcome, everyone, to Three Truths and a Slide. We are making up for lost recordings right now, but we thank you for your patience. We are Three Truths and a Slide. I'm Aaron Schaefer, one of your co-hosts, and the other co-host who has made it through despite a myriad of technical issues that we've been having the past couple weeks, Kristen Froberg. Kristen, how are things sliding?
It's okay. It's okay. By now the listeners will have heard me talking quite a lot about Jeffrey Dean Morgan on the previous episode. Is it a coincidence that the audio really seemed to keep trying to shut me down whenever I did it? No, but I will not be, as Oprah once so effectively said, silenced. I won't be silenced. I mean, I'll have to be silent about him in this episode because he simply wasn't in this episode, nor was that girl. But we're going to get into it. We're going to get into the episode.
We're
here.
This episode features three album covers that was on our original list not silenced. And those album covers are Liberace Unplugged, Jim Morrison Sings Irving Berlin, and Kurt Cobain's Christmas album.
And it's pretty funny to me that I thought that the reason the Kurt Cobain one was fake was due to everyone would have been super sensitive about Kurt Cobain's untimely passing then. And you were like, I think once we were done recording, you were like, no.
I was like, well, that.
That's not a thing.
That was the 90s. Did you see the way we treated and insert any celebrity ever in the 90s? The slide for this episode was AC/DC's Greatest Polka Hits, which hopefully stands amongst Slider's prop department. So
I hope they made it and we're just ready just in case. Like, you never know.
Well, let's jump into the vortex and see what polka hits are on the other slide.
Let's do it. All right.
All right. Sad to report, no polka hits, but no. A lot of various stages of facial hair to speak of. So.
Yep.
World recap, there's the first world, which I've already tipped my hand to, and then the second world is martial law has been in place for 30 years, and the U.S. Constitution is a banned document. And I just realized I have not said yet that this is season 2, episode 6, titled Time Again and World. And if you're confused by that title, Time Again and World, then you're in the right emotional place to absorb this episode, because it is all over the place. I would have a better time describing the title than a recap of the episode. So
it has the distinction of being the first one I watched three times trying to understand it. Here again, not saying I didn't have a good time. Another solid just vibes episode. So.
And so it starts off, and again, this should be like an omen for the show. When there is a Wade voiceover that goes nowhere.
I noted that. Yeah. I noted that. Yeah. I was like, the journal that goes nowhere is back, but only, and then never again seen in the whole episode. Like.
And then we see, isn't there like various shots of women with like, no, I mean, it is facial hair technically. But it's not facial hair you've ever seen on any human before.
I was deeply confused. And I waited for it to be made clear to me, and then that was not. So And keep on keeping on.
So it's this scene where there ends up being a crime, and it's like a pseudo Parisian outdoor cafe scene in San Francisco.
Yeah. And makes you long to be outside just having a nice little croissant.
And this scene happens once in one world and another time in another world. And so the heroes are like, we remember what happened last time. So how does this fit into the puzzle?
Both times, special guest star Rebecca Gayhart's skin, hair, makeup look flawless, on point. Stunning lady.
So we thought that there were guest stars that we called Smolder in previous episodes, but Sliders managed to book the queen of 90s Smolder. Reigns supreme, Rebecca Gayhart. Shout out to her. Maybe one of the biggest guest stars in all of Slide, in all the Slide Nation.
I mean, certainly at the time, like, as much as I love Krychek from X-Files, I think she was in the 90s, she was bigger. And I mean, keep talking about him, Jeffrey Dean Morgan is bigger now, but she was really, really big in the 90s. Although it's interesting to me that she didn't really have a bigger career. Like, I know. I can't remember if it was Melrose Place or 90210. Neither. I was not allowed to watch either thing. Although, sorry, little tangent. In adulthood, when I did encounter Beverly Hills 90210 on streaming and watched most of the first season, I was like, my goodness, this is so darn near wholesome compared to not to sound the way I absolutely know that I'm sounding. And I like a lot of things that I wouldn't want, my imaginary 9-year-old watching or whatever, but it's so wholesome. No, early 90210 is so wholesome, compared to just regular TV, if that even makes sense. And I was like, oh, it was so scandalous at the time. Goodness.
Well, what should be scandalous is Rebecca Gayhart's strange chin hair situation. What is this? I did not understand what that was all about at all.
There was a lot of facial hair that I just was like, I don't, but she's a, I get excited when I see people that I recognize, but yeah, facial hair all over the place. Will it end up being in our episode title? Who can say? Unsolved mysteries, facial hair. Get into that.
So there's a car crash, two dudes jump out, Wade shouts he has a gun, the other guy gets shot and killed, and as she holds his head, he says, Elsie, the Rock, 5'4", which I'm not even entirely sure what it means. Like, it's supposed to be a rendezvous that never happens. I don't know. It was a challenge.
And it was hard for me because whenever I hear The Rock, I think about the only Michael Bay the only Michael Bay film that I can say I genuinely like the real way, which is The Rock, which is hilarious. Sean Connery, Nick Cage, glowing things in tubes. Every time they said it, it made me wish that I was watching the film The Rock. But
yeah.
Alcatraz, just good for content in general. Are we going to get more Alcatraz focused in this season or in the show as it progresses? Or can you not say?
I'm not going to say it's not ever anywhere. It's not prominent.
I wish it was prominent. Did you go through a very obsessed with Alcatraz phase when you were a kid? Or
no, because I grew up in Oregon. And so Alcatraz, wasn't in our culture as kids.
Maybe it's much. Like a kids who've been on a class trip and got hype about it kind of way.
Yeah.
Anyway, Alcatraz is not in this episode very much. A lot of things are not in this episode very much. You would have to I'm going to ask you with all seriousness, what did Rembrandt do in this episode? I know that Wade got told to calm down.
You know, I'm just looking over my notes. I see Rembrandt's name twice, so I don't know what he did either.
He got a paycheck. That's what he did. He loved, and I love that for Cleveland Derricks, because I love any and all scenarios where he prospers. So,
So our heroes could not get out of Bearded Ladytown fast enough. And when they jumped to that vortex, it could not close fast enough, unlike other slides.
Usually they address things and or make like a really awkward or like the way that lady with the rat trap screamed about and noticed. Like, usually for something like that, they make an extremely awkward joke about it.
Or like the mailman.
They just kept it moving though here. So
move the chains.
There was that.
So, and then when they get out the other end, the professor has a great line that you hit my backside with the regularity of an atomic clock. Like, that's that is excellent dialogue. I love it.
I was like, you workshopped that, professor. You workshopped it. But
And then,
him and Rembrandt are in their buddy cop era or bromance era, I would say.
And someone asked what happened, which tees up Jerry to give us an in-episode recap. And then they walk out into the same Parisian scene. And by the way, I think the second one, did the first one also feature John Woo pigeons?
Feature what?
John Woo pigeons.
I don't know.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
So John Woo movies like Mission Impossible 2 is the perfect example. He would throw in just random pigeons in like indoor fight scenes to juxtapose. Oh. Like, it was like a cinema moment of like, you know, like, or excuse me, I said pigeons. I meant doves, where he would like throw doves in. So, you know, like doves are a symbol of peace amongst like people like firing guns, that juxtaposition. So there were random pigeon dove adjacent birds that would fly around to create a John Woo cinema moments.
Hmm.
And it happened in at least one of them. I don't know if it happened in both. And so this time the other guy gets shot and killed.
Well, and I think it's because Wade like sees it coming and yells, but like inadvertently causes the other death, right?
Yeah. So and all the cops are running around wearing kilts. And Kristen?
And all the humor around it is good.
Yeah. Do you want to unpack that right now?
I don't know what was it a result of them being Scottish, or was it also that they could make J. Edgar Hoover jokes? Like, I don't.
No, it was the whole thing was a setup for the J. Edgar Hoover joke. So so there's the rumor that J. Edgar Hoover wore clothes other than men's clothes. And in this world, the theory is that he was open with his wardrobe choices and actually imposed that, since he's been in charge for 30 years, that all cops need to wear what's not kilts, but actually some sort of dress situation.
It was so weird. Also, remember when that was another Leonardo DiCaprio, will he get the Oscar this time film? Reader, he did not. Had to do that business with it. Had to do that traumatic bear movie instead. I'm sorry. Probably, like, everyone listening to this is yelling right now. No disrespect to The Revenant. It's not for me. But, yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio has made quite some interesting films in pursuit of the Oscar. Edgar was one of them. I remember seeing the trailer and thinking, like, I respect you. I'm not going to be watching all that, but yeah, they are so, like, the whole thing is building up to this J. Edgar joke, and then it's just really awkwardly rolled out. Like, it's not punchy. I mean, nor does it need to be, but like Herbert Hoover? No, J. Edgar Hoover. They drop a lot of historical figures that it's meant to be funnier than I think it is, though perhaps it was funny then, you know.
But it was like, so all of the plot points are confusing. Like, the world building is confusing, and even the dialogue is confusing. And so this whole episode has like these three like compounded confusing things on top of each other. But as you go along, like, you don't question it. And at the end, you're like, wait, wait, but why did that happen? Why did he say that? And then nothing adds up, but you do enjoy the slide. Like, it's an enjoyable episode to watch, but if you sit down with a critical eye and a pipe, you will be you will have a struggle.
It's truly breathtaking, though. It was like a Law and Order Special Victims Unit level. We started here and then we ended up here because famously, according to me, Law and Order Special Victims Unit will open with like cold open, some woman screaming, horrible, traumatic. They find their horrifying crime scene. Then like that'll be the first 15 minutes. Then in the next 15 minutes, it'll be like, oh, she was actually violently mauled to death by a tiger that belongs to like a rap star. This is a thing that happened. And then you will suddenly pivot to like, and the reason that happened is because religious cults and child abuse victims speak out. If you or someone you know, and then it gets like all serious and like a Tony Award winner will be on the stand and like someone will point dramatically at him in a courtroom and you'll be like, I don't know what I just watched. Mariska was looking great. But like we really got from crimes against ladies, no, it's a tiger, cults are bad. Like,
yeah. So like an example is the cops are like, so what did this guy look out? And he goes, I went to a street contact to find out what this guy looked like. Turns out they knew who exactly the guy was. I'm like, what are we talking about street contact?
I was very confused about who was cops and who was not.
Yeah. And then in world building, it turned out the Rosenbergs assassinated Kennedy. And like, and somehow because of that, J. Edgar Hoover has had martial law for 30 years.
Yeah, their real life story is so traumatic that I was like, fam, no jokes, please. But I mean, I'm ridiculously like sensitive to like the most bizarre things. But I mean, that's in keeping with, I don't know, 90s humor and just maybe regular humor. I don't know. But yeah, like suddenly Rosenberg's joke. Oh, and they were still talking about electric chair and all manner of things. But if we call back to the scene where Jerry iconically simply demanded to leave the execution chamber where they couldn't put the thing all the way on his head because his hair was just too fly. Yeah. Actually, Slider is the show doing a lot of reminding you of capital punishment. Like, all right. And it does. And just thinking of that makes me wonder, anytime they're in a scenario where they want to not be in it, why doesn't Jerry just insist that he needs to leave emphatically? This solves problems. There's no need for this other stuff.
Secret power.
Yeah.
But one thing that is 90s humor we can all get behind is Sassy Sasso. Shout out to a Will Sasso alert.
Love to see him. Super excited every time he appears.
And also a shout out to Slider's prop department with the Edgar Hoover power computer, the JEH power computer that looked like an IBM computer.
I would like one.
I appreciate
it. Yeah, like a good prop to have.
That would make an awesome cyber deck. I would be all over the J. Edgar Hoover cyber deck.
Oh, yeah.
And so at the, oh, by the way, at the computer store, it's that same like computer store manager from like the pilot, and he's been a couple of other episodes. I think might have been in more episodes than Benish by now. And I'm like,
which a crime, upsetting to me, triggering.
Right. So
Benish forever in my heart.
I enjoy the Weasley computer store owner. Like that guy brings in his own energy and I'm happy.
Right.
If anything, they should have had him in the episode where their home base was at a computer store. They should have had him be in charge there. They could have had him in more, but that being said, Benish needs to be in way more of the show than this guy. That's the point.
Benish needs to be in way more of the show. And that to me is a complete sentence. But
So Wade is holding a thing that they refer to as a chip, but it's really a floppy disk that's not in a casing, or like a mini floppy disk thing. And on it is the U.S. Constitution. And I wrote in my notes the second Gettysburg Address and no individual liberties. Maybe that was part of the exposition dump. But the U.S. Constitution's like a banned document in this world, which again, I don't know how. I don't know. I don't understand. And so then they find out about the Top Hat nightclub and they walk into that. And by the way, this whole world, like I talked about the album covers on top, like culture's been repressed. So this nightclub looks like, you know, like a junior high, like card tables, and everyone has like cups of juice, and it was streamers on the ceiling, and Rembrandt crushing it with the one-liners. He's like, oh, a whole nation of squares. It reminded him of a sold-out gig in Florida where the average age was deceased. And only he could deliver these lines. Like, I'm botching it. It was
No. I think you're doing it. I enjoyed it, but you're doing justice.
And then we got, again, the queen of the smolder. Like, if anything, watch this episode for the smolder, the time capsule that is Rebecca Gayheart smoldering. And
just the hair, like you could never. So many women suffered, women and young girls, and you know, let me not limited people. I think people all over our world suffered with just absolutely crunchy hair, trying to achieve slathering product to try to achieve what she had naturally. We wanted what she had. We did. Like, I still want what she had, and I will. Hey, I'm in a circle back sort of era. I will be circling back to that. But she's in this episode. I will say I maybe thought we were going to be doing more with her, but she kind of came back in the second half for a little bit more. But
yeah. And then so she ends up leading them to where the real dance scene is. And Kristen, did you want to talk about this transition into this other world? No, like... Down below.
Why don't you start? I told you I didn't take very many notes despite my multiple viewings because I was just watching it the whole time going, wow.
So she is the Virgil to their Dante. She leads them down and into this rave club. So from this junior high dance, borderline junior high dance vibes, down to this rave club that's like... That's just like pounding. And
I love what a 90s rave depiction is. It sparks joy.
And it had would you say that it had the same balloon hat energy of decadence from season one, episode two?
I think it was less decadent, but that's because the balloon hat apocalypse energy went pretty hard, gotta say. The balloon hat apocalypse went hard. I will stand by that.
And so it's this complicated plot where they have the only copy of the U.S. Constitution and they want to like broker a deal to get Smolder's dad out of prison, who's a famous judge, and then the cops bust the club. Jerry leaves the roadblock somehow. I think he tells someone he needs to leave. And
that sounds about right.
And then it turns out that Will Sasso is a turncoat. He's a double agent. Long live Judge Nassau.
A lot more character development than Will Sasso is usually given. So we love to see that.
And I didn't take a lot of notes on the plot because I wanted to create like a thread, but I couldn't even find the thread. They have a standoff at the end and they end up giving up the Constitution.
I mean, is it a Sliders episode if there's not a standoff?
A midnight standoff, yeah.
In front of or like near a portal that is open for an indeterminate amount of time, although they are telling us it will not be open for very long at all.
/ indefinite. And
standing offer to just like slide.
So they end up trading the Constitution for Smolder's dad, and he immediately is like, why would you do that? Like, basically, he put himself in a position where he wanted to sacrifice himself, and they're like, I don't know. And our heroes had other ideas. And then it ends up at the computer store, where it turns out they lied and they had the U.S. Constitution there. And it's a very spiritual experience for people to see it. And I swear, one of those patrons at that computer store is Amy Adams, wearing glasses. I swear it.
She could have been uncredited. That happens.
Yeah, she. It's.
We'll do some internet digging.
She's not in. It's not listed in IMDb, but I'm like, man, that looks so much like her. If
and
not,
Aaron,
hopefully she's getting good stunt double work in Hollywood now. So shout out to that uncredited actress. And so, Kristen, we are officially, like, I mean, we could talk a lot about how things in the episode don't make sense, but I mean, we're at the end of the important things in my notes that I wanted to cover.
I mean, we're here for a good time, not a critical time.
This is true.
I would say that I had a good time watching the episode, even if I wasn't, like, I don't know, having an understanding of, like, what was taking place and why. I was still having a good time. Yeah, the professor really telling Wade to settle down, and then she's like, a man just died in my arms, like, just justifiable reasons to be upset, my guy.
Yeah, I'm enjoying watching the episode, but this is gonna be hard to talk about, like, that was my only, I guess, negative experience. And the shock of, like, the junior high dance club down to the rave, like, thumping scene, like, that transition is awesome. Like, the tone of the show totally changes. And I was like, they did that well. And I appreciated them bearing the lead on that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make sense why Smolder was just upstairs hanging out and smoldering. Like, I don't understand that.
She just needed to be there. It's fine.
She just needs a sippy cup. All right. We're on Instagram. Legally, we're on Twitter and Facebook. We have logins for each of those and accounts. We're not there much, but we are there. And if you've ever turned on the television and wished for a show like Dragnet the Next Generation that had sliding doors that went into police offices where men are all wearing kilt adjacent attire, then you understand just how much sliding made a difference.
Yeah. And normally what I like to do is like lift up. It's usually a very positive thing, the way sliding made a difference. Unfortunately, this weekend, and we don't call it cancel culture. We don't call it call out culture. We call it call in culture, because we want to hold ourselves accountable and do better. And it's not Ms. Rebecca Gayhart, who may have a different name at this time. I don't know. It's not her fault. But, you know, in the 90s, in addition to being a very important cast member of many things I was not allowed to watch, she was a Noxzema spokesperson, just looking beautiful, glowing, radiant in these ads. It is not her fault that the girlies, it's me, I was girlies, were made to believe that that level of glowing and radiant skin was available at the drugstore. And, I mean, I'm moving the goalposts all over the place. This isn't even about Noxzema. This is about St. Ives scrub, because it's been on my spirit and I'm mad about it. The Noxzema to St. Ives ruining your skin pipeline. They had us out here thinking we could look like Rebecca Gayhart. First, like, wiping our faces down truly with like Brillo pads, and then just absolutely grinding tiny shards of walnut into the surface of our like tender little teen faces. Rebecca Gayhart, if you're listening, it's not your fault. And please hear that in the Robin Williams Good Will Hunting, but it's not your fault. But like in memoriam, like our faces circa 1995 to 2005, roughly. Men out there, this wouldn't really affect you. I think you were encouraged to, like, wash body, face, and hair with, like, I don't know, Dove dish soap or something and keep it moving. I don't know what horrors they had out there for you. But, you know, we all suffered, but we did all ultimately, you know, we came through. We're still here with skin upon our faces. Some of us had to roll up to school looking like a Stranger Things villain, looking like Vecna, looking like the Mind Flayer, just robbed, absolutely raw. But we persevered, we persisted, and now we're here. We made it. We came out on the other side. Or on the other, I gotta say it, slide.
Oh, Kristen, well, that definitely, that centers me, being on the other slide.
People of Earth, people of the multiverse.
People of the upside down.
Yeah, people, don't let your kids near that St. Ives scrub or the Noxzema, I'm going to say. Look at what is in those things and don't let your kids be walking around with, like, chemical burns on their skin. Anyway, everyone in the episode looked good, though. Let's celebrate that.
Sliding that on your face does not make a difference.
It's a bad difference.
All right.
I think this is our shortest episode, but you know what? It was going to happen sometime.
Yeah. That it feels good. It feels good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Kristen, when can people listen to another episode of Three Truths and a Slide?
You know, Aaron. It's when we catch them on the flip slide.